Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
The NBA reacted to the results of the Derek Chauvin trial like the rest of the world yesterday, as the former Minneapolis police officer was found guilty for his role in the death of George Floyd last May. While many players and coaches like Kyrie Irving and Stan Van Gundy used their platform yesterday to applaud the verdict and push for further actions against social injustice in our country, LeBron James had one simple tweet that started trending online, writing only, "Accountability." Fox Sports NBA analyst Chris Broussard is joining us now. Chris, what was your reaction to the verdict?
Well, obviously, I was pleased that they came to what I believe was clearly the obvious verdict. And the fact that we weren't certain, the fact that we were wondering and there was a lot of consternation over whether or not this was going to be the verdict, I think shows that we're not where we need to be as a society. But I was glad that they found him guilty of murder, which is exactly what it was. And we all saw it on TV. I didn't celebrate because the fact is a man who should be alive is dead now for no legitimate reason. George Floyd should be walking the streets. He should be alive now. And because of the racism of a police officer, a former police officer, he's dead. So the hope, and I think this is what, like with LeBron, posting accountability and a lot of people, all of us in the black community, the hope is that this will serve as a deterrent to other police officers that maybe would have done something similar to this or would have, you know, thought that they could get away with things like this. And not just a deterrent to individuals, but really, hopefully, this will spark systemic change in law enforcement. Because the way Derek Chauvin was looking when he had his knee on George Floyd's neck, he looked like he knew he was going to get away with it. Like he could do this and nobody was going to hold him accountable. And so hopefully this leads to some change and that type of thinking ends. I also believe that the cops that watched Chauvin do this, they need to be held accountable. And we'll see if that ends up happening. But they violated the law enforcement oath of honor that they all took. They betrayed it because they are supposed to hold not only themselves accountable for upholding, you know, justice, but they're supposed to hold their fellow officers to the same standard. And they didn't do that. So they need to be held accountable as well. I'd like to address, you know, some things I'm hearing, you know, from people that, whether they disagree with the verdict or whatever, but they're talking about, well, what about all the crime, blacks killing blacks in Chicago and other places throughout the country? And look, I don't know one African-American who isn't concerned about the homicide rate in the black community. You can go into any black church or mosque on a Sunday, on a weekend, and hear preachers talking about what we need to do within our own community to improve our quality of life. So the notion that blacks aren't concerned with what's going on within our own community is just blatantly false. And people need to stop throwing it out because these are two separate issues, two completely separate issues. And as bad as it is for citizens to kill other citizens, and that's horrible, it is far worse for a policeman who is paid to protect and serve American citizens to be killing unarmed citizens. And that's, I'm tired of hearing that excuse from people that want to, you know, disagree with this verdict or just draw attention away from, you know, police brutality, because they're two separate issues and one is far worse because they're paid to protect and serve. And then finally, I think I hear from some, well, this wasn't race-based. And I just say, look, to some whites, I hate to say it that way, but their burden of proof for them when it comes to racism, they have a burden of proof that is way beyond reasonable doubt. I mean, they would have had to hear Derek Chauvin look in the camera and say, I'm doing this because he's black, for them to believe it was race-based. And you can go back to slavery and Jim Crow and see the same thing. So many whites saying, well, there's no racism. There's no racism here. And so let's just start calling things like they are, because that's the first step to really make a real change.
I agree with everything that you said, Chris. This is really not even a debate here. For me, I believe there are two separate issues, and we can do both things. We can get systemic racism. We can do something with police reform, and we can also do something to address the killing in the black community. Those are two separate issues that we can both be addressed. I, like you, did not celebrate. But I felt that it's kind of like watching the O.J. And I know you, Chris, you're old enough to remember, and I know you were sitting around like 85, probably 90 other million Americans sitting around watching, waiting for that verdict to come. But like you said, this was different. For me, I'm like, the jury saw what we saw. A man kneeled on another man's neck in a prone position for 10 minutes. And all the top pathologists in the world, pulmonologists, said he was dead for 3-4 minutes and he still was on his neck. And even after the fellow officer said, we should turn him on the side, no, we're going to keep him right here. Even as the EMT arrived, he was still on the man's neck. So I'm like, I can't applaud you for doing the right thing. It's like someone said, man, I went to the bar last night, had me a couple of drinks, and I called me an Uber. That's what you should have done. That's what the jury should have done. But the mere fact that we needed to applaud and some needed to applaud the jury doing the right thing, this is absurd. Chris, you mentioned reasonable doubt. For some, it needs to be all doubt. Come on, man. You know what this was. Well, what if he felt threat from the crowd? The man had his hands in his pocket. If you've ever been in a fight, you feel threatened, you do not keep your hands in your pocket. Is this an anomaly, Chris? Is this an anomaly? Is this a one-off? Because Walter Scott didn't happen. Sandra Bland, Alton Sterling, Eric Garner, Tamir Rice, nothing happened. Philea Castile, nothing happened. So is this a one-time, or is this the start of a greater change in which the system will be taken apart, police will be held accountable, qualified immunity be done away with, and we expect wholesale changes from top to bottom? Is this the change? Was George Floyd having to give his life, sacrifice his life for the greater cause? For me, when I look at it, George Floyd's family, we can't give him back to you. Our uncle is gone. A brother is gone. And we can't bring that back. But maybe a little relief from knowing the man that was responsible for taking George Floyd's life got what he justly deserved, which is guilty, guilty, guilty. And he will pay, because a lot of people, Eric Garner family didn't get that. Alton Sterling's family didn't get that. Walter Scott's family didn't get that. Mm-mm. They got some level of accountability, and hopefully it makes it a little easier. Doesn't erase it, doesn't take it away. But I'm not so sure, Chris, that this is going to bring about the change that we need. And Lord knows we need change. Mm.
So I would like to thank both of you for what you just said and everything you've said when it comes to race relations here on Undisputed. I've learned a lot from both of you. And I just appreciate sort of getting to sit between the two of you and hear you go back and forth about this. Maybe I was wearing my rose-colored glasses yesterday, which I rarely seem to wear. But my two cents from my side of the table on what happened yesterday was, I do believe it was a milestone moment, because to both of your points, the obvious happened that had never happened before.
Correct.
That's it. It was so obvious. The first day Shannon and I talked about this incident in Minneapolis on this show, I just flat out plunged and called it cold-blooded murder in broad daylight, committed by a cop who reeked of smug arrogance, of invincibility, with one hand in his pocket, Derek Chauvin basically saying to the world and to those videotaping the incident, I am above the law because I am the law.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, the jury said wrong. Yesterday, all three counts came back guilty, guilty, guilty. And it was so blatantly foregone conclusion obvious to me, and yet it had never been obvious before.
Right.
Okay, so I would like to think, to Chris's point, that a resounding message just got sent from sea to shining sea to all those potentially racist, trigger-happy cops out there. This will no longer be tolerated. You can go to prison. I'm thinking here for life, right? Mm-hmm. We're thinking 40, maybe 50 years. And for the first time in the history of race relations in this country, a message got sent that the white cop can't get away with this anymore. And I would like to also thank so many prominent voices in the sports world,
yep,
starting with LeBron James and then ending with Colin Kaepernick, for their parts that they played in influencing that jury just to do a very simple right thing, which is to bring back fairly quickly guilty verdicts. Thank you, LeBron, and especially thank you, Colin, because Colin basically professionally died for this cause, mm-hmm, because he gave up his ability to play quarterback in the National Football League to make a statement of he will no longer stand for this. He's going to kneel for this.
Right.
And it started a groundswell. It helped fuel the Black Lives Matter movement to a point that I do believe, and this is my two cents from across the table, very unscientifically, I believe much of white America is much more receptive to your plight and your cause now than they ever were before. That's just my two. Now, where that goes, how that manifests itself systemically, I don't know. I just think we've hit a turning point in this country, maybe a watershed moment in which a lot of white people are at least awakened to what's happening.
Chris, do you remember sitting by? I remember watching Waiting for the Rodney King, and I was like, oh, I already know. They guilty. We just saw. They beat the man for 10 minutes. That was clearly excessive force. That was clearly unnecessary. I said, I ain't even worried about that.
Four cops.
Yeah.
All acquitted.
Chris, I'm like, oh, I already know. They gone. Me and my boys, we talk about, so, oh, yeah, they gone. They ain't no way. Ain't a jury in America. You see that tape and not going to say that's excessive force.
30 years ago.
And when you come back, not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. I'm like, what? So the question is, Chris, you and I both know what will happen if this lady, this young 17-year-old, Darnella Frazier, if she does not film this, Derek Chauvin still has his job. Derek Chauvin is still in position to terrorize more people, minority people, because he had several instances, reports of excessive force, and he was still on. So without this tape, because he didn't put what he did in his statement, he said he got resisting arrest and he had a medical episode. No weapons was formed. Well, the weapon was your knee. He didn't mention that he had the guy in a prone position. He didn't mention that he had his knee on the man's neck for 10 minutes. He mentioned none of that. And without the tape, guess what you're going to have to say? Everything what would have been said 50, 70 years before. He had a medical condition. You take the police officer, and you know and I know, Chris, when you go into a courtroom, next to the judge, the police officer has the most credibility. Everybody would have believed Derek Chauvin that this man, he was resisting arrest. He had a medical emergency because he had amphetamines and he had some drugs in his system. But no, you can't say, oh, well, what happened was he wasn't healthy. Basically, they tried to say George Floyd was not healthy. He had been healthier. He could have held his breath for 10 minutes. The pathologist says even a healthy adult couldn't have held his breath for this long.
I totally agree, Shannon. I mean, look, I've always said since we've been starting to see all these murders and killings on camera that I bet this is happening even less than it used to happen. It's just now, thankfully, everybody's got a camera phone. And so now we're seeing it. But to your point, in the past, how many false reports have been out there? And you just had to accept what the police officer said, that he resisted arrest. He pulled a gun on me. He had a knife, whatever it was. And this is actually what really happened. And I want to address Skip with the athletes, because I agree, Skip. We have to. I want to salute the athletes in all the various leagues for keeping this front and center. And I believe black athletes and there are other athletes of other races who've also lended their voice, which is great. But I believe black athletes are arguably the most powerful voice in the black community, to the mainstream society. And I hate to say this because it is not it doesn't speak well of our country. But I fully believe that if African Americans were not such great athletes and not such dominant athletes in America, that I don't think we as a people would be as accepted within American society as we are today. I really don't. I think that our greatness in sports has endeared us to much of white America to a degree, and that has eased race relations to the degree that they're eased at this point. So I think our athletes need to keep speaking up. Don't just relax because of this verdict, because obviously there's systemic change that needs to be made. And they are the voices that people listen to. They're irreplaceable. Shannon Sharp was irreplaceable as a tight end when he played in the NFL. And so LeBron James, Russell Wilson, Pat Mahomes, they're irreplaceable. And so they have a voice and they have leverage that other African Americans who can't run a 4.44, who can't dunk a basketball, don't have. So they need to keep their foot on the pedal.
Yep.
Boy, well, Chris, thank you for joining us. And I agree, boy, I will and always will respect LeBron James for his voice, but so many athletes and just his ability to not only speak up, but then just to be the athlete he is. I just echo his words, accountability, and it's emotional. It's still a community in Minneapolis that's hurting, that needs our support. And I am praying that this verdict will help and create change. And I'm praying for George Floyd's family as well today. So, Chris, thank you for joining us. We're going to shift gears.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow the Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Despite beating the Pelicans last night, the Nets still got some bad news to deal with. James Harden had a setback on his hamstring recovery, and the team announced that he'd be out indefinitely. Brooklyn head coach Steve Nash was equal parts frustrated and understanding, saying the process was, quote, back to square one. We'll rehab him and get him back whenever we can, and who knows when that will be. Hopefully that comes sooner than later, but there's no guarantee. So, Shannon, how big of a blow is this for the Nets?
It's a huge blow, Skip. It's a big deal, very, very big deal, because, you know, the playoffs are four rounds, Skip, and you know what hamstrings, you know how they are. They are so tricky. They feel great one day, and you might go 2-3 days, they feel great, and you make the least sudden movement, the sudden start, stop, and it grabs. And you and I both know, normally when hamstring grab in the playoffs, you're done. That's magic. That's Byron Scott. It ended them when they played the Pistons that last.
I was there at courtside.
it was over, Skip.
And I threw up my hands and said, well, that's the end of that deal.
That's it.
I came all the way to Detroit for this.
That's what you went all the way for that. And look, we know if they're healthy, they're going to be a tough out because they got three guys. On a given night, either one can get you 50, mm-hmm. and two of the three can get you 35, and all three of them can get you 25 plus and make your night miserable. And then when they're driving and doing what they're doing, they can kick the Shamit. They can kick the Joe Harris.
Yeah.
They got other guys that can make you pay for trying to double them. But, Skip, this is huge. And what we're seeing is because the season was so condensed, you're playing so many games, and the body doesn't get a full chance to recover. Think about it. Harden, KD, Dame, Kawhi, Bron, AD, Giannis have all missed significant time. But you knew this was going to happen, Skip. That fast turnaround, condensing the season, guys playing 30, 40, go double overtime. You're going to play 45, 47 minutes, and this is what you get. But this is a big deal. This is a big deal because not only is Harden, he might not be back, Skip, until the start of the playoffs. KD, we don't know when KD had a hamstring that kept him out 2 months, and now he got a thigh contusion. So he might be out for another week or two. They're not getting out of the East with just Kyrie. Kyrie's been sensational. But Kyrie can't get him past Philly, and he can't get him past Milwaukee by himself. They need these guys.
Are you sure there's not a little wishful thinking operating under your surface?
No, Skip. I want everybody, because I hate when guys get hurt and you're like, well, what would have happened? KD Achilles, Klay Thompson's knee. Skip, what would have happened? Do we believe Toronto would have really beaten Golden State if KD's healthy? I like to have answers. Everybody played. Everybody was at their best. That team won 4 games. Your team didn't. Without James Harden, if he's back, Skip, is he going to be able to go 100% with that hamstring? Because I don't know.
Okay. Usually I would go along with you on big deal, but in this crazy season, yet another pandemic impacted season, it is not a big deal to me because everybody is racked by pandemic issues.
Right.
That they're related to pandemic because the season got squeezed together.
So who the healthiest might be determined who wins the title.
I don't know who will be. That's from the injury gods. I don't know. But I get you about hamstrings. I hate all this. I don't like to talk about it. I'm going to knock on my wood over here. I don't like to wish this upon anybody because when the words are spoken, they somehow get spoken into existence.
Right.
I don't want to see any more injuries. I tried to watch the Clippers at Portland last night, and I sat back after a couple of minutes and I said, no Kawhi, no Ibaka, no Dame, no Nurkic. What am I supposed to make? What credibility am I supposed to read into the outcome of this game?
Right.
Paul George was sensational down the stretch. Okay, and it meant what? It just meant that they won another game and stayed afloat up there near the top of the West.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. The Nets. Am I going to write them off because of this? No, I'm not, because they are 39 and 19, and I don't know how they're 39 and 19. That's a deep basketball team.
Yeah.
And they're a half game back of Philly for the top of the East. Well, I'm not going to be surprised if they wind up number one in the East. They
right.
get the number one overall seed. Will that matter? Well, not if they don't have two of their three.
Right? Exactly.
But if they do have two of the three, I'm not going to write that off.
Right.
And when they have had three of three, it's only been 7 games, they've been sensational. That we have never, ever seen this kind of three-man firepower on one basketball
team. Not prime.
And we have also never seen a better fit of three-man firepower
right.
because it is all peace and love. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I can read body language on the court.
Right.
They are really having fun playing together. And they fit because Kevin is not a dominating ego. He does not need the basketball to score his 30.
Mm-mm.
He is as efficient a scorer as you will ever see. Just give him 15, 16 shots, and he'll get you 30 points.
Right.
And Kyrie, you mentioned earlier in the show, he was just special last night down the stretch.
Yeah.
You want to talk about clutch? He just was like, get out of my way.
Right.
I got this. Against a loaded team that's playing below its what it should
potential.
Be, but it was at New Orleans.
Right.
And Kyrie said, I got it.
Right.
James, on many given nights, just said, I got it.
Right.
Kevin comes back, and all he does is make shots when he came back. The other night when he took the knee in the thigh, he had just made 3 out of his first 3 shots, right?
Yep.
What's not to love about this team, even if they get let's just do this. What if they play no more games together and whatever game number one of the playoffs is the next time those three play together, but they're healthy?
Right.
What if they're healthy?
That's the key, Skip.
Okay, if they're healthy, you better look out.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Because I'm not sure they need any more repetitions. I just don't know if they do.
I think the biggest thing is, Skip, that if you get the one seed, you're going to avoid Milwaukee in the second round.
Okay.
And so I think that's what they really want, and that way you deal with Philly. Because it's going to be, and that's the thing. But you mentioned health. I forgot Embiid. Embiid missed 18 games with an injury. So the question is, Skip, this might be a situation where whomever the healthiest is.
And by the way, Joel's always got something. If it's not an injury, it's his stomach ache,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Okay? And am I sure about LeBron's health going? I'm going to knock on wood for it. I'm not sure about it.
Right.
Am I sure about AD? I'm less sure about AD than I am about LeBron. Right. But if you tell me both are healthy all the way home, you got a great shot.
Absolutely.
Okay? Am I sure about Kawhi coming back full strength? No.
Right.
Well, what's going on with Ibaka? He's missed like 18 games with a back injury.
Right.
Well, how about back injuries? Yeah. Sometimes I think I would qualify back injury as more serious than hamstring.
Oh, yeah. Well, you ain't moving that back. Okay. That back hurting. Ask Scottie Pippen about his back.
Okay.
Skip, you remember how he was dragging around that last finals.
What am I supposed to do with all this?
Yes.
Right?
And I can understand, Skip, these are your stars. The stars, everybody that's on this list was an all-star. Every last player was an all-star.
All-star.
The only superstar that hasn't missed any game is Jokic. Everybody else has missed games.
And now he doesn't have his running.
Right. He's that without Jamal Murray.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Skip, because it's an injury and they thought he was back. I mean, so they gave him 2 weeks and then he had a setback on his comeback.
Yep.
So now he's down another, they got 13, 14 games left, Skip. So we're looking at another 3 weeks into the season. So he might not be back into the playoffs. How do you, Skip, condition? And remember, I thought that was a problem because I thought James Harden didn't come into the condition that he needed to. But when you play in 45 minutes, and we was giving him credit, like, man, he played all those minutes because he was leading the NBA in minutes played.
He was. And he was balling fat.
Yes!
Seriously.
Yes!
He's got a little paunch and he's just balling. Running up and down the floor like he can run all night.
Yes.
I think he was born conditioned. Seriously.
These injuries, we do not need anymore. I like what you say, Skip. We're not going to talk about it. We don't want to speak it into existence. I'm going to knock on some more wood around us. We don't need any more.
No mercy.
In a recent interview, Hall of Fame pitcher Pedro Martinez spoke about a time he threw batting practice to Tom Brady, saying that TB12 had a good swing and was obviously a real athlete. Brady and Martinez were nearly teammates as the GOAT quarterback was actually drafted by the Expos in the 1995 MLB draft. Pedro still played for Montreal, but seven Super Bowls later, yes, seven, it looks like Brady chose the right sport in the end. So, still Shannon, how far could Brady have gone if he had chosen baseball over football?
He went as far as he could go. High school. Stopped. Did the right thing.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. Skip it. Stop. We need to stop this. We need to stop this.
I think we need to start.
No, we don't. So, let me get this straight. If I go out there right now and I make, let's just say I shoot 10 threes and I make six of them, I guess I could have made it to the NBA. So if I go out there and Pat Mahomes throw an average guy 5 or 6 passes, and he catches all of them, he could have played in the NFL. We got to stop this notion, Skip. Just because somebody hit a baseball in a batting cage, that doesn't mean they could have played at the highest level. Now, you told me, and many people have told me, the hardest thing to do is to hit a baseball.
Yep.
But Tom Brady, at batting practice, the 507th pick, 18th round, it's disrespectful to the guys that actually make it to play a particular sport. I've seen guys. I know guys that have actually played both. I know Ty in person. Deion Sanders, I know him personally. Know Bo a little bit. Been around Bo a little bit. I know it seems like, oh, yeah, he could have done that. But, Skip, do you understand the skill level in which a player has to have to be able to be a professional, not only at football, but to be professional? Now, Kyler Murray might have could have been on it, but Kyler Murray had played baseball. He had kept playing baseball. He played baseball from high school, was playing it in college.
He was the 8th pick in the draft.
Yes.
Okay.
So if Kyler Murray was to say, you know what, if I had given this some serious, put football down, I believe Kyler Murray could have done it. Mm. But to say a guy that because he hit a home run or hit batting practice, nah, I'm not going there. I refuse to.
I think you're missing the boat on this one. When I saw that video yesterday, I will qualify myself. I started covering baseball. I covered the Yankees for the Miami Herald in spring training back in 75-ish. And then I came out here to the LA Times and started covering the Dodgers. Garvey, Say, Lopes Dodgers, went to the World Series. That was in 76. And so I got a pretty good idea what a baseball swing would look like on the big league level. And that's a big league swing to me. So I called up the story last night because I wasn't sure exactly what happened to Tom. He played at Sarah High School in San Mateo, where Barry Bonds went. Mm-hmm. He's Bobby Bonds' son. And read a story from Kevin Malone, who in 1995 was the general manager of the Montreal Expos, who says that he made the trip to the West Coast to when Montreal played at San Francisco, just so he could go to San Mateo and try to confirm what his scout in the area kept telling him was, there's a big league catcher waiting in San Mateo and we've got to take him. That was Thomas Edward Patrick Brady Jr. So he checked him out and they brought him out to a pregame just to take some BP with the big league club and to take some infield with the big league club. And this Kevin Malone goes on and on about he turned heads with powerful throws from home plate and a natural swing that crushed balls into the Bay Area sky. And here's the quote from Kevin Malone. He had a chance to be a major league all-star catcher at 6 feet, 4 inches and 220 pounds. So the reason he fell to the 18th round was because they talked to Tom and his father and they said, no, we're going to Michigan to play football. And they tried to talk him out of it so that nobody thought he was going to play baseball, that he was going to pursue football. Mm-hmm. So nobody drafted him very high. So they just took a flyer on the 18th round. And then they went back to Tom and his father and offered him a second round contract. It was 400 grand at that time. And 95 was pretty good money. And tried again to turn his head with the bonus that they were going to pay him. Mm-hmm. And it didn't work because, you know, he was committed to playing football at Michigan. My point is, there's more athletic ability going on here. I don't even know if you consider baseball an athletic game. Maybe it's more of a hand-eye coordination game. But whatever that thing is that allows you to make contact with a baseball that's traveling 95 miles an hour, it's a pretty special thing. Yeah. And to your point, it's hard to find.
Yeah.
And I believe he had it, and they believed at that point that he had it. And I think you're underestimating just how, like his high school coach is quoted in this article as saying, he could catch and throw. He received the ball as well as anyone I've ever had. And he's a legendary coach at Sarah High School. He said, I thought he was going to be amazing in Major League Baseball. So that's the guy that they saw at age 18.
Skip, everybody's great at high school. Hell, I was an All-American in track. I was a great basketball player. That doesn't mean I could have been on the Olympics. That doesn't mean I could have made it to the NBA.
I think you're underestimating. I just saw that swing. I said, that's a natural swing.
I saw J.J. Watt hit one out. So guess J.J. Watt could have made it to the MLB. Okay. I saw J.J. Watt hit one out in Minute Maid Park.
Okay, but he just muscled it out. You know it, and I know.
But it got out.
Okay. I saw Odell hit one out the other day, and I said, that's a swing.
So he could have made the majors.
I believe he would have had a chance if he had pursued it. But I definitely believe you're once again underestimating Brady.
No, because baseball ain't that hard. If a guy can make it, a guy that did this, like I said, he hadn't played. Stop this. Can you stop this? It's disrespectful to the guys that actually make it to the sports, to make it to a professional level in a particular sport, for another guy to just to say, well, I could have done that.
You have always doubted Tom Brady's overall athletic ability.
No.
And now you're doing it again.
No. Skip, there's a reason why he chose football. Mm. He chose football because he knew that was his best chance.
No, because he right. loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like, hey, a lot of guys played football and chose baseball. Some guys, you know, played football. Matt Barnes said, I played football, was good at it, chose basketball. I think everybody that played in a particular sport made the right decision.
How many GMs of MLB teams take a look at a high school kid and says, he had a chance to be a major league all-star catcher?
Skip, there are a lot of guys. A lot of them. Because they draft these guys, they go to the minors, and they never leave. Mm. So how'd that work out for them?
I don't know. Mm. Special athlete.
Very, very, very special athlete.
No mercy.
Yesterday, while we discussed Steph Curry's all-time rank among NBA players, Skip named several players he would take ahead of the two-time MVP, but the one that got a lot of attention online was Hall of Famer Bill Walton. So this was trending on Twitter all afternoon yesterday. So Skip, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I would take Bill Walton in playoff games in a heartbeat over what I have not seen from Steph Curry, which is very unclutch games 5, 6, 7, 2016. I dare you to go read the box scores and tell me what you see. the crucial turning points, game four and game six at Oracle in the 2019 finals. See what you don't see from Steph. Now let's see what we see from Bill Walton. I'm sure a lot of the younger people, and you're old enough to know what I'm talking about here, they see Bill as this grateful deadhead in tie-dyed 60s shirts who has turned into this goofball commentator who is liable to blurt out anything at any moment on national TV. Am I right about that? The Bill Walton I closely observed at UCLA and with the Portland Trailblazers was the flip side of that. In fact, because he had a stuttering problem, he barely even spoke to the media. He was seen as this glowering, menacing presence who played with a supreme edge. And he dominated college basketball and professional basketball until his feet failed him, because fairly quickly, both of his feet just gave out underneath him. He had one injury after another. But when he was right, he was much righter than Steph has ever been in the postseason. Cases in point, national championship game, 1973 for the UCLA Bruins against Memphis State. Bill Walton scored 44 points on 21 of 22 shots. 21 of 22 because he was a seven-footer who was as light on his feet as any seven-footer I have ever witnessed. It doesn't matter, white, black, you name it, Bill Walton was it. He was an agile gazelle. He was the greatest passing big man I have ever seen. And he played on a pogo stick because he was such a quick jumper and could block shots and rim protect like nobody out this side of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And the point was, in Portland, they played the Sixers of Dr. J in the finals. I don't know if this is before your time.
I remember they were down 0-2.
Okay, this is Dr. J. This is George McGinnis. This is Doug Collins. I obviously had fame on television thereafter. Henry Bibby. This was World Be Free. This was Kobe's father, who was Joe Bellybean Bryant. And this was Daryl Dawkins' nickname, Chocolate Thunder. That's what he was up against. And in the closeout game six in that series, in which he was the finals MVP, Bill Walton went for 20 points, 23 rebounds, 7 assists, and 8 blocks of that lineups featuring Dr. J's All-Stars. Are you kidding me? And he turned that right around the next year and went into the regular season and was the MVP of the NBA. I'm sorry. That guy who played with that edge, who was complete flip side of the guy you see on TV, I'm taking him over Steph Curry any day or night in the postseason.
You do realize that UCLA is not the NBA, so I'm just going to discount that.
Okay, but it was the all-time great finals performance.
Yeah, he was great. He was a historically great college player. But Skip, you do realize in 77 he finished second in the MVP. He won the finals. They won the finals MVP. He'd come back the next year. He won the regular season MVP, playing 58 of, if I'm not mistaken, of a possible 82 ball games. But did you know over the next four seasons, he played a total of 14 games?
I told you his feet failed him.
Okay.
He just fell completely apart.
So Steph has three titles to Bill's one. Steph has two MVPs to Bill. And Bill only went to two All-Star games. Steph is a six-time All-NBA player, a seven-time All-Star, the greatest shooter ever lived.
Who would you take one game for your playoff life? Who would you take, Bill Walton or Steph Curry? I got Bill, and I'll beat your butt all day and all night. You can't stop him.
The question is, who is the better player? Steph Curry is a much better player than Bill Walton.
I'm all about the postseason, and I haven't seen it from Steph.
The man was great one postseason. He was great one postseason in 77. You do realize he played like 13 years.
I saw it. And I saw him turn it right around into a regular season MVP. You can't was he more dominant in his time than Steph
has
been in his time? Yes, he was.
No, Skip, stop.
Steph is about oohs and ahs and distance shooting, and he has revolutionized the game as a distance shooter. But when it comes to the postseason, go look at his three-point numbers, games 5, 6, and 7. You benefited. Yes. He handed you a championship, you and LeBron on a silver platter, because he stunk it up for three straight games.
So what happened the year in 78, he won the MVP of the regular season. They did have it in 78 finals that year. What happened? Why wasn't he a participant?
He was hurt. Okay, I told you his feet failed him. It was tragic. It was sad.
Steph hasn't been hurt? Steph ankles?
He had ankle injuries.
Yeah.
They corrected it.
Yeah.
They got him braces that he still wears that work.
Skip, I don't know how on God's green earth, you can make a case that Bill Walton, who basically had two healthy seasons, is better than Steph Curry.
Hey, you're not answering my question.
Yeah.
At his apex, who was better, Bill Walton or Steph Curry?
Skip,
at their best.
Skip, his apex only lasted 365 days.
Well, he was the finals MVP and the regular season MVP. He showed you. He showed you what he was doing in college basketball. He just tore it apart.
Skip, let me ask you, that was in the years
when people stayed for four.
Has there ever been a guy that went regular season and finals MVP in the same season? LeBron has done it twice. Michael Jordan has done it several times.
Okay, we're not talking about them.
Has there ever been a unanimous MVP in league history?
Mm.
The one guy on the left
has been. I'll take Bill Walton and I'll kick your behind.
No, you won't.
Yes,
no, you won't.
No mercy.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.